We'll continue on here. What I was sharing is the New Testament is the detailed explanation of how the Messiah is going to unite the 12 tribes of Israel. The ultimate fulfillment of that is detailed in the book of Revelation. Revelation chapter 1 and verse 1 says, "The revelation of Yeshua HaMashiach." Well, in order for there to be the revelation of Yeshua HaMashiach, it means that he's not fully revealed. This book is about his revelation. And ultimately, his revelation is through his role to unite and to gather the exiles of Israel. Now, there, the setting of the book of Revelation is in verse 10, where it says, "I was in the Spirit on the Lord's day." On the Lord's day. This is an eschatological term known as the day of the Lord. The ingathering of the exiles of Israel take place in a period of time known as the day of the Lord. Well, who is the Lord? Who's the Lord that it's speaking of? It's Yeshua. Yeshua Yahweh. What is his day? We call it the Messianic era, when he sets his feet down the Mount of Olives and he rules and reigns and sets up his kingdom. When he sets up his kingdom on the earth, it's his day. The day of the Lord. Now, we're told about biblical day in Genesis in chapter 1. Genesis chapter 1 and verse 3 says, God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And then it says in verse 5, "And evening and morning was the first day." Then in verse 8, "And evening and morning was the second day." And then verse 13, "And evening and morning was the third day." In other words, a day in the Bible is an evening and a morning. So how do we understand the day of the Lord? It has an evening and a morning. Well, the Sabbath is called the day of the Lord, or the day of Yahweh, in Isaiah, in chapter 58. Isaiah chapter 58, and then we begin reading in verse 13. It says, "If you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy of the Lord honorable." So the Sabbath is called my holy day. The Sabbath is called the holy of the Lord. The Sabbath is called the day of the Lord. The celebration of the weekly Sabbath is a foreshadowing of the ultimate Sabbath known as the day of the Lord or Messianic times. And even that is a foreshadow of the Sabbath of Sabbaths, and that is the new heavens and the new earth. The Sabbath is called the day of the Lord. It foreshadows the Messianic era, which is called the day of the Lord. And the day of the Lord has an evening and a morning. 2 Peter in chapter 3 and verse 8, "Beloved, be not ignorant of this one thing, that one thing is with the Lord 1,000 years, and 1,000 years as one day." Then it says, "But the day of the Lord shall come as a thief in the night." The day comes as a thief, and it comes in the night. The day comes in the night. What do we call the night? We call it the tribulation period. The day of the Lord is a major subject of the prophets. Joel chapter 1 verse 15 says, "Alas, for the day of the Lord is at hand." Joel chapter 2 verse 1, "Lo, the shofar in Zion For the day of the Lord is at hand. And now it says about the day of the Lord, Joel 2:2, it is the day of darkness and gloominess. It's the day of clouds and thick darkness. The book of Obadiah is the study of the day of the Lord. Obadiah 1:15, for the day of the Lord is near upon the heathen. Zephaniah 1:14, the great day of the Lord is near. It is near and hastens greatly, even the voice of the day of the Lord. That day of the Lord is a day of wrath, a day of clouds, a day of distress, a day of wasteness, a day of desolation, a day of darkness and gloominess. Zechariah 14:1, it's the day of the Lord. It says, behold, the day of the Lord comes. So, the day of the Lord is a major theme in the Bible. In fact, the entire book of Isaiah is written in the context of the day of the Lord. And we're told that it's in the day of the Lord that all the nations will come to Jerusalem, and out of Zion shall go forth the Torah and the word of Yahweh from Jerusalem. Isaiah 2:2, it will come to pass in the last days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established, and the top of the mountain shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow to it. And many people will go and say, come, let us go up to the mountain of Yahweh, to the house of the Elohim of Jacob. He will teach us his ways, we will walk in his paths, for out of Zion shall go forth the Torah and the word of Yahweh from Jerusalem. So we have an idiomatic expression for the day of the Lord, in that day, in that time, or in those days, and in that time. Isaiah 13 says, verse 1, the burden of Babylon, which Isaiah, the son of Amoz, did see. And then it says in verse 6, how ye, for the day of the Lord is at hand. Now we go to Jeremiah in chapter 30. Jeremiah 30:3 says, for lo, the days come, says Yahweh, that I will bring again the captivity of my people, Israel and Judah, says Yahweh. I will cause them to return to the land that I gave their fathers, and they shall possess it. The subject is Israel and Judah returning to the land. That's the subject of Jeremiah 30:3. Then it says in verse 7, alas, for that day is great. What day? The day that Israel and Judah return to the land. What day? The day of the Lord. That day is great. It's none like it. It is the time of Jacob's trouble, but he shall be saved or redeemed out of it. It's during Jacob's trouble that Israel and Judah will return to the land. This is the darkness part of the day of the Lord. This is the setting of the book of Revelation. Revelation 1:10. I was in the Spirit on the Lord's day. The day of the Lord. He's being propelled in a vision in messianic times, in tribulation times, and he's recording what he's seeing during these days, during these times. Now, if we go to Revelation 15:2, it says, and I saw as it were a sea of glass mingled with fire, and them that got the victory over the beast, over his image, and over his mark, and over the number of his name. These are those who get the victory during the tribulation times, getting victory over the beast, over his image, over his mark, and over his name. And look what how they're described. They're having the hearts of God. Now, why are those who have the victory, get the victory over the beast and his image and his mark, but why are they said to have hearts? This is an idiomatic way of saying that they are the redeemed tribes of Israel. If we go to Psalm 137, and beginning in verse 1, we read the following. By the rivers of Babylon we sat down and we wept when we remembered Zion. The setting is the rivers of Babylon, and weeping when you remember Zion. And then it says, we hang our hearts on the willows. What if you hang your heart on the willows, what are you not doing with your heart? You're not playing it. Notice in Babylon, you don't play your harp. So our harp is on the willows. And then it says in verse 3, they that carried us away captive required of us a song. The harp is on the willow. And our captors say, sing us a song. They required of us a song, saying, sing us one of the songs of Zion. And the answer is, how can we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? The harp is on the willow, and we can't play the Lord's song in Babylon. Which means when we play the Lord's song, we're going to play a harp. So in Revelation chapter 15, verse 2, it says they have the hearts of God. And what do they do with these hearts? In verse 3, it says that they sing the song of Moses and the song of the Lamb. The song of the Lamb is the Lord's song. With the heart, they sing the song of Moses and the song of the Lamb. When was the song of Moses sung? After Pharaoh and his army drowned in the Red Sea. They got the victory over Pharaoh. So when is it being played again, the song of the Lamb? When you get the victory over the beast and the mark in the image. So the phraseology, having the hearts of God, and then they're singing the song of Moses and the song of the Lamb, is an indicator that the 12 tribes of Israel have been regathered. Now, the uniting of the 12 tribes of Israel is the 3.5 years that precedes Messiah setting his feet down on the Mount of Olives. We see that from Revelation chapter 12. In order to see the background of Revelation 12:1, I'd like to share this with you. Hebrew is a spiritual language, and in the Hebrew language, every Hebrew word goes back to a 2 or 3 letter root. And all the words that contain the same 2 or 3 root letters are in the family, is in that family, and the meaning of those words are related to each other. So we have the word Zion, which consists of Zadi, Yod, Vav, Nun. Now we have another word that also contains the letters Zadi, Yod, Vav, Nun, and it's Zion. Not Zion, but Zion. And Zion means the sign. Because Zion and Zion have the same letters, then one of the meanings of Zion or Zion is a sign. Remember, it says in the New Testament that the Jews require a sign. That can be rendered, the Jews require Zion. If you ask an Orthodox Jew, is Yeshua the Messiah? The answer is no. And why isn't he the Messiah? Well, the answer is because the Messiah gathers the 12 tribes of Israel, and Yeshua didn't gather the 12 tribes of Israel. He's not the Messiah. Translation, the Jews require Zion. The Jews require the Messiah to gather the 12 tribes of Israel. Zion means a sign. So we go to Jeremiah in chapter 31. We go to Jeremiah chapter 31, and we have Rachel in verse 15, weeping for her children, refused to be comforted because they were not. Rachel is weeping. She's not comforted. But then in verse 16, it says, refrain your voice from weeping. And it says that your children will come again from the land of the enemy. When they come from the land of the enemy to the land of Israel, Rachel's told to quit weeping. Which means the reason why she's weeping is her children are in exile. And then it says, verse 17, there is hope in your end, says Yahweh, that your children will come again to their own border. And it refers to Ephraim in verse 18 and verse 20. Is Ephraim my dear son? So the subject is Rachel's children, specifically Ephraim, returning to their border. That's the subject. And then it says in verse 21 in the King James, set up waymarks. The Strong's number is 6725. It's the Hebrew word zion, which means a sign. It says, set you up a sign. But the vows are put there by the Nazarite. And when Jeremiah wrote this, it wasn't with vows. So therefore, it could be read without vows, set you up Zion. So how do you know when the 12 tribes are going to be united? How do you know when Ephraim is to return to the land of Israel? The answer is, your sign is Zion. Set you up Zion. What is the sign of Zion? Revelation in chapter 12. Revelation chapter 12, verse 1. There appeared a great wonder, or there appeared, as the cross reference says, a great sign in heaven. I could read that from the Hebrew. I could read that translated. There appeared a great Zion. And what's being described here is a woman with a crown on her head and 12 stars. What's the 12 stars represent? The 12 tribes of Israel. Why does she have a crown on her head? It represents ruling and reigning. It represents authority. And so this is the prophecy of the 12 stars and the woman with the crown on her head. This is the prophecy of uniting the 12 tribes. And it's the prophecy of the 12 tribes ruling and reigning, having a crown. We call that the Messianic era. And when she has the crown on her head, the sun and the moon are under her feet. When it's something's under your feet, you have authority over it. The moon represents Islam. There will be no more conflict with Islam once we get to Messiah setting his feet down on the Mount of Olives. The sun is Greco-Roman Christianity, Constantine Christianity. That there will be no more Greco-Roman Constantine Christianity. Because the Torah is going to go forth from Jerusalem. So Revelation 12:1, the sign that we are given is the sign of Zion, the unification of the 12 tribes of Israel. And once this woman gives birth, she flees in the wilderness for 1,260 days. With the birth of Zion, there's a fleeing in the wilderness. With the birth of Zion, there's a fleeing in the wilderness. But what is this birth of Zion? Well, if we go back to Isaiah in chapter 66, Isaiah in chapter 66 and verse 8, it says, who has heard such a thing? Who has seen such thing? Shall the earth be made to bring forth in one day, or shall a nation be born at once? A nation being born at once. As soon as Zion travailed, she brought forth her children. Zion is travailing. Well, the travail is an allusion to the tribulation period. So Zion gets born during the tribulation period when she travails. What do we see in Revelation? In chapter 12 and verse 2, that she being with child, cried, travailing in birth, and she was in pain to be delivered. It's the tribulation period. Now, it says in Isaiah 66, verse 8, as soon as Zion travailed. As soon as she travailed, she brought forth her children. Who's the children of Zion? The unification of the 12 tribes of Israel. So as soon as she travails to give birth, as soon as she does it, her children get born. Zion gets born. So what is this travail? It's an event that happens in the day of the Lord. From the creation of a Palestinian state, there'll be a rebellion against that Palestinian state in Judea, Samaria, or in the West Bank. And when they rebel, they will declare their independence. And when they declare their independence, the Bible calls that independent state the state of Zion. And when that state gets born, that's going to cause the children of Zion to come forth. Because when she's born, her children flee in the wilderness. When the children of Israel came out of Egypt on their way to the promised land, what was in between? The wilderness. So on their way to the promised land, they fled into the wilderness. So this is a term describing the beginning of the fleeing with the destination of the land. Now when the children of Israel came out of Egypt, when they came out of Egypt in Exodus in chapter 19 verse 4, it says, "You've seen what I did unto the Egyptians and how I bear you on eagle's wings." They were brought out on eagle's wings. Well, what do we see in Revelation in chapter 12 when the woman flees in the wilderness? It says in verse 14, the woman was given two wings of a great eagle. Now when the children of Israel came out of Egypt, what happened? Pharaoh and his army pursued them. What do we see in Revelation chapter 12? It says that the serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away of the flood. But the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon cast out of his mouth. Same thing. The dragon's coming after those who are fleeing in the wilderness. And just as Pharaoh and his army drowned in the Red Sea, we have that the enemy is not able to be successful. Well, there's another sign in Revelation in chapter 12. And this sign in verse 3 is a great red dragon having 7 heads, 10 horns, and 7 crowns, which goes on in Revelation chapter 13, describing a beast that's coming up out of the sea who rules and reigns for 42 months. Both signs have a duration of 3.5 years. The first is a woman fleeing in the wilderness for 3.5 years. The other is a beast that rules for 42 months. That beast that rules for 42 months is one world government. So we will see the advent of one world government at the same time we have the advent of the state of Zion. And one world government will oppose Zion. And there's a war between them for 3.5 years. And those that get victory over one world government, over the beast system, are the exiles of Israel who are returning back to the land of Israel. Why? Because Yahweh is with them. Yeshua Yahweh is with them. Now, how historically did the children of Israel come out of Egypt? In Exodus, in chapter 13 and verse 20, it says, "They took their journey from Sukkot, and Yahweh went before them by day in a pillar of a cloud to lead them the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light to go by day and night." They were led by the cloudy pillar. That's how, after they put the blood of the lamb on the doorpost, how they were led into the wilderness. They were led into the wilderness with the cloudy pillar. Now, we see where, for example, the 144,000 are located in Revelation 14, verse 1. It says, "I looked, and behold, a lamb stood on Mount Zion with him 144,000. The location is there on Mount Zion. Well, in Isaiah in chapter 4, Isaiah chapter 4, and beginning in verse 5, it says, the Lord will create upon every dwelling place of Mount Zion. Will, that's future. He will create upon every dwelling place of Mount Zion and upon her assemblies, plural. So there's going to be multiple assemblies on Mount Zion, and he will create a cloud and a smoke by day and the shining of a flaming fire by night. How is it going to be? The cloudy pillar is going to be leading the exiles of Israel back to the land at the second coming, just as it was out of Egypt. Who is this cloudy pillar? It's Yeshua the Messiah. So literally the Messiah is going to be leading his people back to the land once again, just like it was coming out of Egypt. Well, when they came out of Egypt, there was a leader who interacted with the cloudy pillar named Moses. In the end of days, the leaders are the 144,000. And in Revelation in chapter 7, where it is speaking about the 144,000, in describing them, their work, and their ministry, it says in Revelation chapter 9 and verse 10, after this I beheld, and lo, a great multitude which no man could number, of all nations and kindreds and peoples and tongues. They were of all nations and kindreds and peoples and tongues. That's tabernacles talk, because tabernacles is called the feast of all nations. And it said they had palms in their hands. Well, you wave palms at the feast of tabernacles. And they cried with a loud voice, salvation to our God, which sits upon the throne and upon the Lamb. Well, in the first century, there's a ceremony at Sukkot where they went around the altar either 3 or 7 times, and they said these words, Hosanna, save now. Hosanna, save now. Salvation, Hosanna, salvation to our God. So this is tabernacles talk, and it's linking the ministry of the 144,000 with tabernacles. Why? Because in Leviticus, in chapter 23, one of the reasons why you're supposed to celebrate the Feast of Tabernacles is, in verse 42, you shall dwell in booths 7 days. All that are Israelites shall dwell in booths, that your generations may know that I made the children of Israel to dwell in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. You know why you're supposed to dwell in booths when you celebrate the Feast of Tabernacles? So that you can remember that that's how the children of Israel came out. Well, if that was just a historical event, why do I every year have to remember what happened thousands of years ago? It's because it will happen again, just like it did happen. Because where did they take their journey from? They journeyed from Sukkot. So I believe that it will be at the first Sukkot of the last 3.5 years that the cloudy pillar will show up. And for those who are assembling to keep the feast, there will be one there of 144,000 along with the cloudy pillar, and you will be directed for the last 3 years how to get back to the land. And the cloudy pillar will feed you, protect you, and lead and guide you. So we have in Revelation in chapter 7, we have a question that gets asked. Verse 14, he said unto me, who are these that came out of great tribulation, and where did they come from? So the question is, who are these that came out of great tribulation? The answer that is given of who are these that came out of great tribulation is a quote from Isaiah chapter 49 and verse 10. It says, they will hunger no more, they will thirst no more. Neither shall the sun light upon them, nor any heat. For the Lamb which is in the midst of the throne will feed them. He will lead them unto living fountains of water, and God will wipe away all tears from their eyes. The answer of who are these that came out of great tribulation is Isaiah 49:10. Isaiah 49:10 is describing the exiles of Israel. If we go back and look at it in context, Isaiah in chapter 49 and verse 6, it's describing that you would be my servant to raise up the tribes of Jacob. That's the gathering of the 12 tribes of Israel. And then it says in verse 9 that you may say to the prisoners, go forth. Who are the prisoners? The exiles of Israel. Because beginning with the Babylonians and the Syrians, they took the tribes of Israel captive. They took them captive, they became prisoners to them. And it says that you may say to the prisoners, go forth. Verse 10. It's describing that you would be my servant to raise up the tribes of Jacob, and that you may say to the prisoners, go forth. Verse 10, that's the setting. They will not hunger nor thirst, neither shall the heat nor sun smite them, for he that has mercy on them will lead them, even by springs of water shall he guide them. That is the answer to Revelation 7 of who are these that came out of the great tribulation. Verse 16, they will hunger no more, they will thirst no more, neither will the sun light upon them nor any heat. But the Lamb which is in the midst of the throne will feed them, he will lead them unto living fountains of water. Now, remember Rachel was weeping for her children? She was weeping when her children were in exile. Well, when she was told that her children were going to return to their own border, to return to the land, she was told, refrain yourself from weeping. So look what it says here in Revelation 7:17. God will wipe away all tears from their eyes. Why is there tears in their eyes? It's the tears of the exile. Why have you got to wipe away all tears from their eyes? It's because they are being regathered. So the book of Revelation has given us the detail of the actual regathering of the exiles of Israel. The Messiah is going to do it with the help of the 144,000, and they're going to be in conflict against the beast and the beast system. But they're going to overcome the beast and the beast system, and the celebration of it is they get to play their harps. So in Revelation in chapter 14, describing the Lamb, the 144,000, and it says in verse 2, I heard the voice of harpers harping with their harps, and they sang a new song. See, the gathering of the exiles of Israel is likened unto a song, and that joy of that song is likened to the joy of a marriage. It says in Jeremiah in chapter 31 in verse 10, hear the word of the Lord, all you nations, and declare it in the isles afar off, and say, he that scattered Israel will gather him and keep him as a shepherd does his flock. The subject is the gathering of the exiles of Israel. Then it says in verse 13, then shall the virgin rejoice in the dance. I will turn their mourning into joy. I will comfort them. Then shall the virgin rejoice in the dance. So they sing a new song. You see, the ingathering of the exiles is likened unto a song. Hosea, in chapter 2 and verse 15, it says, I will give her her vineyards from there in the valley of Achor, where there is hope. Achor in Hebrew means trouble or troubling. So the valley of trouble, the valley of trouble, the valley of trouble. It's a reference to the tribulation period. So the valley of trouble is a door of hope. Why? She will sing there. She will sing there as in the days of her youth, as in the day when she came up out of the land of Egypt. She will sing like she did sing. What did she sing? She sang the song of Moses. What do we see her singing in the future? Revelation chapter 15 and verse 3. They sing the song of Moses and the song of the Lamb. Revelation chapter 14 verse 3. They sang, as it were, a new song. And no one can learn that song but the 144,000 and those who were a part of their ministry. In essence, put everything in context, Why can no one know that soul? Because unless you participate in it, unless you experience, you're not going to be able to testify of it. Your song is your testimony. So it says in Psalm chapter 98, it says, sing unto the Lord a new song, for he has done marvelous things. His right hand and his holy arm has gotten him the victory. The Lord has made known his salvation. He has openly showed it in the sight of the heathen. So when his holy arm and his right hand has gotten him the victory, and the Lord makes known his salvation, and he has openly shown it in the sight of the heathen, that's called a new song. When does he openly show the salvation to the heathen? When he physically gathers the exiles of Israel, because if they're physically got to be regathered, the heathen's got to see it. So we have the Messiah gathering the exiles of Israel. It's taking place during the tribulation, specifically the last 3.5 years of the tribulation. There is a conflict with the beast and the beast system who opposes the ingathering of the exiles of Israel. And their opposition is likened to Pharaoh's opposition, who wouldn't let the children of Israel go. They are led by the cloudy pillar and the 144,000. And in their ingathering, it's likened unto Sukkot, or the Feast of Tabernacles. Now it says in Psalm 126, it says, when the Lord turned back the captives of Zion, we were like those that dream. And then it goes on to say in verse 4, turn again our captivity, O Lord, as the streams of the south. Well, what happens when you have streams? They come into a mainstream. So you're going to have those who are going to be coming back, being led by the 144,000, different camps around the world. And at some point, one camp's going to be joining with another camp, like the streams of the south. And they're going to be returning back to the land of Israel. So how do we understand how this is going to happen? It is going to happen as it did happen. Micah, in chapter 7 and verse 15, it says, according to the days of your coming out of the land of Egypt, according to those days, will I show unto him marvelous things. According to those days, will I do it. It's a parallel of the historical Egyptian redemption, but it is on a greater scale. Paul knew, and he understood this. That's why he says in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 1 through 4, don't be ignorant that all our fathers were in the cloud. They all passed the sea. They were all immersed under Moses in the cloud and in the sea. Speaking about the historical Egyptian exodus. And then it says in verse 7, now all those things happened unto them for examples. Everything that happened to the children of Israel was for a type, a shadow. But they were written for our admonition, our encouragement, our instruction. They were written for our admonition upon whom the ends of the ages are come. That's because the end of the ages, that final generation who sees the coming of Messiah, seeing him setting his feet down on the Mount of Olives, is when the uniting of the 12 tribes are going to take place, and it's a parallel of the historical Egyptian redemption. So I'm going to share with you in the last 5 minutes the locations of where this return is unto. Jeremiah chapter 51, verse 50, Jerusalem. It says, you who have escaped the sword, go away, stand not still, remember Yahweh far off, and let Jerusalem come to your mind. So there's going to be a return to Jerusalem. Secondly, there's going to be a return to the mountains of Israel or the West Bank. And Ezekiel chapter 37, beginning in verse 15, goes on to describe the unification of Ephraim and Judah, two houses of Israel. Then it says in verse 22, I will make them one nation in the land upon the mountains of Israel. Upon the mountains of Israel, that is Judea, Samaria, that is the West Bank. Then we have Micah in chapter 7 in verse 14. It says, let them feed in Bashan and Gilead as in the days of old. Let them feed, let them live in Bashan and Gilead as in the days of old. Bashan and Gilead is what we would call today Western Jordan. And then in Zechariah, in chapter 10 and verse 10, it says, I will bring them into the land of Gilead and Lebanon, and place will not be found for them. So they're going to be brought to Lebanon, Bashan and Gilead, as well as Lebanon. And then there's a specific prophecy for Sephardics in the book of Obadiah. Obadiah, which is one chapter. Obadiah, verse 20. The captivity of the host of the children of Israel, which is in Sepharad, that's Spain, shall possess the cities of the south. That is the Negev. That is the Negev desert. And then we have in Daniel chapter 11. Daniel chapter 11 and verse 41. Even these will escape out of his hand, Edom, Moab, and the children of Ammon. So the places of return, the places of return are Jerusalem, Judea and Samaria, or the West Bank, Bashan and Gilead, which is Western Jordan, which extends up to southern Syria, Lebanon, and the Negev. Now, some of that territory isn't in Israel's possession today. And so it will come about through a military conflict where Israel will win, and that military conflict is Gog and Magog. Gog and Magog, the invasion, Ezekiel 38:8 and Ezekiel 39:2, is an invasion against the mountains of Israel. It doesn't say they attack all of Israel. It says they attack the mountains of Israel. They get defeated, and in their defeat, in Ezekiel 39:25, it says, therefore, thus says the Lord, now will I bring again the captivity of Jacob and have mercy on the whole house of Israel. He declares the exile over with the defeat of the Gog-Magog invasion. So what are your two primary signs to return to the land? The defeat of Gog and Magog. He says the exile is over, and also, Revelation 12, the birth of the state of Zion, which begins the last 3.5 years. Well, if the return of the land is at the beginning of the last 3.5 years, and Yeshua sets his feet down on the Mount of Olives on Yom Kippur in the fall, when is the beginning of the last 3.5 years? It is at Passover. It is at Passover season is when we see the birth of the state of Zion. If that is a rebellion against the Palestinian state, the creation of one, then we are going to see that that Palestinian state is going to be done before Passover, because the rebellion against it in the declaration of the state of Zion takes place at Passover, because Passover is the month of or he doesn't. So that is a major overview for you of looking at the New Testament, seeing that the central theme of the New Testament is the role of the Messiah to gather the exiles of Israel, and the details surrounding how it will happen. He will raise up disciples who will become fishers of men. He's got to empower us with his Holy Spirit to proclaim the message. But ultimately, the ultimate gathering of the exiles of Israel takes place when Messiah is revealed in the day of the Lord during the tribulation, and specifically the last 3.5 years of the tribulation, being led by the caterpillar, Yeshua the Messiah himself, along with the 144,000, and he's bringing salvation in the sight of all the nations. All the world is going to see the deliverance of his people when he brings them back to the land. Those miracles will exceed the miracles of the historical Egyptian redemption, so much so that when Passover is celebrated in the kingdom, when Messiah returns, you're not going to be celebrating and talking about coming out of Egypt. You're going to be talking about how he gathered all 12 tribes from all the nations where they were scattered during the greatest trial upon the earth, Jacob's trouble, when a worldwide beast system was set up, and how he delivered his people through those times. So I pray the message has been a blessing to you. I thank you for coming out.